Welcome to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. Happy New Year, friends. This is the first episode of the new year, 2022. And yeah, I'm really grateful to be joining you wherever you are today. And I'm really excited for you to hear this episode. So this is the podcast where I sometimes talk about touring and the music industry and songwriting and snacks. And this episode goes to some different places, and I'm really excited and happy that it's going to be the episode to kick off a new year for all of us. Today's guest is Faraday. I just adore Faraday. She is such a lovely human, and she's somebody who, after every time I speak with her and see her, I just feel better. I feel better about life and my place in it. You know, like, she just makes people feel good. She does that with her music. She does that with her comedy, and she shares some really beautiful, things with us today. So let's get right to it, okay? We talk about boundaries, we talk about mindsets, we talk about meditation, we talk about TikTok. Today's guest is Faraday. I'm so excited to get the chance to speak with you. Thank you.
This is all just an excuse for me to hang out with you for an hour. So I am delighted.
That's been like the whole purpose of this podcast, really, for me, is like connecting with friends. And like, you are definitely somebody that I would have been, you know, seeing, hanging out with a few times over the last 2 years. And we just our paths just haven't been able to cross. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity to hang out with you virtually.
Well, isn't that the good things about these times? We can connect virtually.
Yeah.
And then capture it for a million years on podcast form.
I was going to say, yeah, we can have a nice heart to heart and then share it with strangers. Strangers, which I believe are just friends we just haven't met yet.
Do you? I feel like you have too much anxiety, actually. Like, you know, so we have my friend Whitney is someone who I believe literally believes that strangers are people that she hasn't met yet. I believe that, like, strangers are people I just haven't figured out how to make them happy yet. You know what I mean? Like, what can I do to make you feel better about your life? We're not friends, but can I, you know, my people pleasing comes out.
Yeah.
But are you someone who's like, yeah, strangers are people who are just like not my friends yet?
That is how I go into situations. That is how I, honestly, that's how I go into social situations. That being said, people can let me down very easily. You know, like, it doesn't last for long.
I was like, people are just, strangers are just people who haven't realized they don't like me yet. No, that's not true. I mean, I think that's just like the little kid inside of me. Most people like me. I'm quite a likable person, honestly, but
I believe you are. I think you are.
Oh, thank you, Megan.
Well, it's just the truth. It's just the truth. And like, you know, when I say the thing about strangers to being friends I haven't met yet, I do believe that. And that is a part of why I did enjoy touring as much as I have in the past, because I was always actually genuinely excited to meet people, excited to like stay at a billet's place. I was always kind of exhausted by that, because I am I need to be alone to recharge. But it was just, I always enjoyed that. I don't know. And like, I've just like, you know, over the years stayed with people through, even like through Airbnb. Actually, I was talking to Dana Rempel from Bears and Hazemore about this situation when we stayed in an Airbnb in New Brunswick, and we hit it off with the family so much that I believe they left a review on Dana's profile, because he's the one who booked that Airbnb for us, saying that we felt like family. And then they just started letting us stay there for nothing, like for free. And we just had to, like, we didn't have to, but we usually would play a few songs with them, because they also played, and then they invite their neighbors over, and it was just like this really sweet community. Yeah, everybody was like Really, really nice. So that's the stuff. I've been missing that a lot these days.
It's true. There are places I miss traveling to just to see my buddies, you know, the venue owner or the, you know, the regular, or yeah, the Airbnb owner or the restaurant owner that you love to see whenever you come through town. Like there's all those like parts that are scary, that are not scary. Sorry. I was having this conversation while also thinking about the weirdest, billet we'd ever had. So I was having like two thoughts at once, but yeah, I miss that part. And I also miss seeing people like you, you know, like this community that forms on the road,
mm-hmm.
Of the people that you see more than some of your friends, because you're mm-hmm. like at the same conferences or festivals or so. Yeah. The weirdest places I ever billet we ever stayed, like when you went in, it really smelled like cats. And then like they led us to like their room, but it was like their bedroom. So then we were like, wait, are we sleeping in the main bedroom with them? Like, where are they sleeping? And then there was a water bed. And then when we looked around, the woman clearly loved to have like boudoir shoots, but there's like photos of her everywhere in boudoir, like in the bedroom, in the living room, like cats and Rough Riders. And we were just like, I think we're gonna drive home tonight. Just like the vibe, it wasn't our vibe, but they were very kind of them to put us in, but it was a little scary. We're like, what's going on here? I think we'll just find a place to sleep.
So how did you like, you were already in their house, how did you get to the point of being like, I think we're gonna stay somewhere else without, you know, hurting anyone's feelings? How did that social interaction go?
Well, please. So it happened you get to see the place. We got to see the place before before sound check. So you know, you go and then you're like getting ready, and so then you're like then you do sound check, and then you kind of check in, you're like, that was weird, right? Yeah, that felt really weird. This doesn't feel quite right. Okay. And then you're just like, you know what? At the end of the show, you're just like, just so you know, we just decided to make new plans. Don't worry about it. You know, sleep in your bedroom without us.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Sorry. My social skills are not in the finest of state lately. So
you're like, how do you have that conversation?
Yeah. What does that look like? How does that feel? How did people react? Yeah. So I appreciate the pointers, if you will, about just like how get out of that situation.
This is something about me. I'm a very polite person who has a lot, mm-hmm. who is a real people pleaser. However, I have like really good boundaries when it comes to like entertaining people before and after a show. I've got like mega talent in this area. Like, you know how after some shows they want you to like come back to a party and like have food with people, and as two introverts, that's like so exhausting at the end. For me, yes, anyway, at the end
yeah,
of the night.
Same. Yeah.
At the end of the night, I'm just like, nope. And I always just like, okay, I'm going to bed. See you later. Because I always feel like I gave enough. I'm not going to. So I don't actually like when people, you know that you're letting them down, but I'm just like, okay, I'm going to bed. Thanks. Most people are too polite to have a direct conversation with you. And if they do, you can just be like, you know what? I am actually really tired. Thank you so much for understanding. And then I just go to my room.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I appreciate you sharing that and giving me the courage to also do the same. I feel like I've gotten better at doing the same over the years. Mm. Especially, but you know what's nice though? This is like me totally like passing off like the pressure. I feel like I have a couple bandmates who I don't believe are like truly as introverted as I am. So it's like, okay, yeah. Well, this is a time for Tanner to shine. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, that's the great thing about having bandmates is that you can relieve some of the pressure.
Yeah. 100%. I'm feeling that so much so with like, with the onstage banter as well. Like I've always loved entertaining and being on stage. And like, if I have an audience that's like so willing to be weird with me, regardless of whether or not I'm solo with a full band, I'm like, if I'm ready to be, or if the audience is also ready to play, you know,
I don't mean totally.
Play music. I mean, be goofy. And I feel like, I've talked to a lot of friends about this, but it's like, I don't know at which point, in our development from like childhood to, you know, being a teenager to adulthood, we were told or thought, like, we think we can't play anymore. We think we can't be goofy. And if we're going to be goofy, we need like a substance to help us like get quote unquote loosened up, and then you can be goofy and play, right? Mm-hmm. But kids are just like goofy and they play, and it's so, you know, it's creative and it's normal. And so for me, it's like really important for me to not only be sober on stage, because I get falsely accused of being intoxicated on stage all the time. So it's like really important to me that I'm like, no, I'm sober, and you can be sober, and you can be goofy, and you can play. Like, so when the audience is like also willing to go to that place with me, I'm just like so excited. But when I have my bandmates with me, because they're also like very, they're also very goofy people. They like to have fun. We take life like, we're very serious, you know, we care about a lot of things, like more now, like for me, like I feel like I care about things more now than ever before. Also, that being said, I also care about like being goofy more than ever before, because I've thought about this a lot in the last 21 months or whatever, you know, like what I actually like about being on stage, what I actually like about performing and everything. But yeah, bandmates on stage are also very great.
Yeah, I think that's why like a live show is a co-creation. Like, we're creating it with our bandmates and ourselves, but also the audience. And so I think what I hear you saying is that it's when it's a co-creation and not just you performing, that's when it's cool. And I feel the same way, because then what you made that night only exists that night, right? Yes. Like, it's not about the songs or your banter. It's like this thing you made with the audience, because someone yelled something out, and then someone asked you to sing Happy Birthday for Sheely. Sheely, that's a new name, I guess. You're welcome, Sheely, for that shout out. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I love that. I love thinking about it like that, because I think that's what I was trying to get at. And then you just like, you just distilled my ramblings into an actual term. And I appreciate that.
Oh, yes. My pleasure.
So I have to ask, I feel like you've really expanded, like you've always been a very funny person. I've always really enjoyed your humor, and that's always come through on with your banter and on stage. I feel like in the last, you know, 21 months, you've leaned even more into your like straight up comedy and been making a bunch of videos online. Dear listener, if you haven't checked out Faraday's social media, I encourage you to do so. I'm curious what it's been like to create like comedy videos, and how that feels different or similar to like, say, making a record or writing a song.
Well, there's lots of parallels. Like, you know, I show up to make a video just like I would to write a song, right? Some days in the morning, I don't have any ideas. And I'm just like, okay, well, let's just hope for something. And you kind of open your palm and hope. And sometimes you write a banger. And sometimes you're like, well, that was not much of anything. And so I think that that's kind of similar. I started doing the social media really as an opportunity, because I felt like, you know, you have to go where the audience is. And I knew that touring wasn't a possibility. And so I was like, you have to just get really serious about social media for your music. And so I started like doing that. And I kind of just got into, you know, what I'm good at on stage was like, I could make people laugh and I could make people cry. And I was like, okay, so how do we do this on social media? And just exploring that. And I feel like it took me probably like 6 months to find some kind of rhythm with that. And it's truly like finding a new art form. I would say like I've come to, I don't know, love it in a whole new way. Than I like, you know, music has been like the beloved of my heart since I was like 2. This is what I wanted to do. It's like the career I wanted to pursue. And then like this little surprising little comedy videos have been quite the surprise. But I feel like they may be crumbs to like little crumbs setting out a path to where I'm going to take my career. I'm not really sure yet, but I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Ooh. You've sparked my interest, my curiosity. Well, even more so. I've always been interested in everything you do. Is that weird.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Is that a weird sentence to say? But you know, I love your music, and I've been like a, I don't know, a big admirer of your career for a very long time. I feel like when I first kind of got involved with the Saskatchewan music scene, you were really working with your solo project, and of course, then you were in the Riveters for like what, 10 years?
Yeah, 9 years. Yeah.
9 years. Wow. And yeah, always been like very, I don't know, like you've been like really inspiring to me. And so now sweet. When you're talking about like these crumbs, I'm just like, tell me more. But that's okay. You know, if you don't want to say what you think, well, like it's okay.
You know,
this is also a, you know, a somewhat public platform. You know, we have listeners.
That's right. Well, I'm sure you do. Yeah, I don't really know where my career is going. And I mean, and none of us, you know, none of us really do. But yeah, I released, you know, 3 solo songs and a thing of Faraday, and I'm like really proud of them. But I also know I don't want to return to my previous life of like touring 100 days a year. When I look at my body and how, where it was in it health-wise, when I look at the stress on my family being away, I have a child. I just kind of was like, yeah, that's, I loved every minute of it, and I don't want to go back there at the same time. You know, you're like, I did that, and I feel really pleased with that.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for my next adventure in life. You know, and I'm still very passionate, and I'm still like very creative, and I'm still, you know, not going to fit into a 9-to-5 world. So what do I want to do? And so it might be something around this. I feel like songwriting is a place in general where I write from my pain usually. And creating videos is a place where I write from my joy. I have to like work on making myself laugh every day, on being mischievous, on thinking about, you know, what makes me laugh, or what do I think is funny, and sharing that. And I think that's also a testament to the work I've done around my mental health, to work on cultivating joy and happiness in my life. So when I think of like where I want to spend my time with my thoughts, it's on thinking more joyful thoughts and adding that to the world, I guess. Not that, you know, sad thoughts aren't, you know, obviously very important. I have lots of sad songs, as do you, but for myself, like, what are the thoughts I want to think, you know?
Yeah.
I want to just be happier and be more joyful. So,
oh,
can one find that in social media? I will just follow me and we'll find out.
Okay. This is very interesting to me. Because the other, actually earlier today, I felt really happy. And it caught me off guard. Okay.
What is this?
Well, I often feel happy, and I often feel joy, because something that I've tried to do ever since I read about it in a magazine years ago, probably on an airplane or something, was the importance of finding awe. Like, if you can have a moment of awe every day, you know, like trying. And I live in the middle of nowhere, so I get to see the sky every day. And quite often, like the sky does like blow my mind every, like pretty much every day, if I remember to like really spend some time with it. And so that quite often is my moment of awe. And I love like being able to see the moon as clearly as I can, and the Milky Way. And for some reason, I keep falling asleep before any of the Northern Lights this year, but that's been happening in the past year. But that has helped. But this morning I felt like strangely content. And I thought, okay, what's that? I'm curious, would you mind sharing some of the practices, if you will, or to help you cultivate your joy? I just love that that phrase, like, cultivate my joy. You said that, I wrote that down. I thought, very
so
cool.
I think it was in 2018 or 2019, when my daughter was no longer on the road with us in Roads and the Rivers, I knew I'd have time. And so I was like, and I had developed like motion sickness, so I knew I couldn't read or do work on the road. So I was like, what am I going to do on the road for fun to like be something else? And I started getting really into meditation. And the meditation I got into is the work of this guy named Joe Dispenza. And one of the things he talks about is that, well, through his work, my own realizations was my neural pathways were really primed and practiced for like to think, to get myself to be anxious and to feel like, you know, not so great in 2 minutes. I could select the thoughts that would make me not feel good in 2 minutes. Mm. But I didn't know how to select the thoughts that would make me feel good in 2 minutes. And so my meditation practice essentially became practicing feeling good. So that is what I do in my meditation. And I still meditate at least an hour a day. I definitely, when I have times like now where there's not as much sunlight, I experience more. I have to battle my thoughts more. So I meditate more. Like sometimes I meditate 1, 2, or 3 hours a day. I know that sounds insane, but you can find little pockets where I just focus on feeling good to create the neural pathways, because I just didn't have them. I just didn't have the neural. So what that's taught me is that I like find something I love and then I magnify it essentially. And it makes, and I've learned how to be happy. Like I've learned not only to find joy, but then to go deeper into that emotion and expand it. Just like you do with songwriting, you know, you find a feeling,
yes,
and then you go deeper into it and expand it. And that's what we write songs about. It's the same thing in my meditation practice or in just in my day. Like, how do I practice joy? How do I practice happiness? Because that's the way to become happiness. So that's mostly my practice, is I find happiness and I try and, or like, you know, if I like feel, I try and battle my thoughts a lot. Like right now I'm like, oh, I don't have any good ideas. I'm never going to be funny again. You know how that is. You know how you can do it. Like, you know, I'll never write another good song. I'll never be as good as that song. You know, and I just practice the thought like that I imagine I have a great idea. And I just, I practice the idea that I've got an amazing idea. Even though I don't have an amazing idea, I practice the feeling of having an amazing idea.
Oh, I love like, that.
Yeah.
I feel like so often we focus on the final result, and you know, I do that a lot with songwriting, and I'm trying, I used to do that a lot with songwriting. I'm really trying to break that habit and to change my mindset on it, because it's like you write a song and that's great, that's fun, you know, you did this, okay, cool, and then it can become this thing that's larger than you, right, and take on a life of its own, and then in some ways, you know, it doesn't even feel like yours anymore, right, but really, like, what keeps me doing it, what keeps me returning to it, and it's like, it's that process, it's the process of being creative, and I was actually writing about writing this morning, and I was thinking, I'm my happiest when I'm writing. And I thought, no, I'm my lightest when I'm writing. I don't know if that's the right word yet, but it's like, I'm the most like relieved, maybe. I don't know. Where it's like, I'm letting things go be somebody else's, and not like, you know, they don't have, no, like not in the sense of like someone has to take them on, but I'm letting them not even be mine anymore in a way.
Yeah.
Like, do you still feel connected to a lot of your songs? Like I mentioned earlier, you know, I got familiar with your music when you were Faraday solo
well,
in like 2009, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I stripped the internet of those albums so that nobody could ever find them. That's the beauty of being this old. And so I don't really feel, it's interesting listening to them and just being like in a different place. And then with the Riveters, you know, it was a co-creation. So it's hard to feel connected to that because it's a different piece with the writing.
Yeah.
And then with my new place, like the new writing I have has a lot to do with an experiment of like using my empathy in order to write out other people's pain. Because you know how sometimes you can sit with someone and their pain, I really feel how difficult their life is, but it's not mine. And it's actually, I felt like it was a really great place to write from because, you know, when it's your pain, it's sometimes too close to write about. There's too many layers to it. Hmm. Whereas when it's someone else's. So that was this last, that last piece. But I too, like yourself, I'm really working, what I like to think about it is I'm working on my life to be less focused on outcomes and more focused on the conditions. So what I mean by that is, like, even when I was in the Rose and the Riveters, there was like things I wanted to achieve, landmarks I wanted in my career. And, but they hurt me to get them, right? Like, it required so much sacrifice. You know, we had to do, you know, fly from this side of the earth to the other side of earth, and there's no sleep, and, you know, and maybe you get a booking, and but maybe you wouldn't. And then through this meditation practice, because I started focusing on feeling successful, I started feeling successful. And then I no longer wanted to create that outcome if the conditions didn't make me feel good to get there. So if I couldn't feel like a success while going to achieve that outcome, then what was the point of that outcome? Does that make any sense? I don't know, you know, classic thing to say as a woman. Does that make any sense? Anyway, so yeah, I just didn't want to hurt myself in the process of getting an outcome anymore. And I'm hoping that by changing my life to focus on the conditions, that the outcomes will match the conditions, you know, like how we get to a stage and we think, oh, this is going to make me feel successful. And you get there and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, oh, this doesn't actually feel at all like I thought it would feel. It actually still feels like hustle.
Yeah. You know? Wow. I really want to keep talking about this. We do have to take a short break, but then I really would love to return to the to everything you just said, especially you know, with you get to that stage and it's you think that will make you feel successful, but you still don't feel successful, because I feel like I have maybe thought that feeling of like, well, this actually doesn't make me feel successful, I think I have mistaken that for drive. But let's dig into that in just a moment. We just gotta take a short break. Okay, thank you, we'll be right back. Are listening to Pep and Chad with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center. Today's guest is Faraday. Okay, a friend of mine shared a meme the other day, and it was about internalized capitalism, and I was just like, I actually just messaged him and I said, stop this, you know, you know, stop holding up a mirror, you know, as a joke. I was just joking.
Yeah.
But like we were like you were saying before the break, like the getting like I've set so many goals and passed so many goals in my life already, and I still feel like I'm just so, I don't know. I don't even know how I feel. I right now, the only word that's really coming to mind is like, I don't know, like hungry for more. I think that it just doesn't feel, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't feel like I've had that like quote unquote success that I thought this stage would feel like for me. And that feeling, that lack of success, I feel like I have mistaken that as drive, like, oh, I want to keep going on, I want to keep going, when it maybe is just like this like emptiness and unwillingness to appreciate what I have. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure you do appreciate what you have, and yet you also want more.
Yeah.
And I think there's elements of that that are like also part of the human condition. Like, I think that the idea is like life, we will never get done, and we will never get done, you know, it will never be done perfectly, and it will never be done. But then there's also, parts of us that are just like capitalism that's been inside of us. That's like, if you're not achieving something, then what are you doing with your life? Right. And that's, highly, you know, at least that's something I have a hard time with and I still struggle with. It's not like, it's not, something I'm not continually working on. But yeah, isn't it interesting, right? Like when you feel like, oh, I definitely thought this was going to feel differently than it does, you know?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you hit all these milestones that at one point in your life were absolute dreams, right? Like, man, you know, Juno nominated, you know, like, you know, and you're just like, oh yeah, it doesn't feel like success. It just feels like, you know, and I mean, that's the truth, is that no one thing will give you the success.
Yeah. Feeling. A friend of mine once said, like, he was talking about small successes and said something like, you know, because they'll always feel like small successes. And it's taken me a long time to kind of understand what he was saying with that. I guess you could have a career that just overnight goes like, whoa, and like takes a totally different leap. But would you even if that even if you had that kind of trajectory, sorry, I have a hard time pronouncing that word, would that even feel like a big success, right? Because of how we can interpret this. But I like that, because they're all small successes, and I actually look at it that as like a little, like as like a little staircase, where it's like you take a step and you take a step and you take a step, and I feel like for the most part I'm fairly fairly content. But I just, yeah, you've given me a lot to think about today, my friend.
Well, yeah, it's, I guess it's the thing of like, the important thing is, you know, you don't get to where you are without being driven, and that that's an important part of your process and your success, you know. But yeah, at the same time, for myself anyway, I'm at a place where I guess I'm experimenting too. Like, I know what it's like to kind of hustle. I mean, part of this too is like, our careers were probably heavily influenced by a narrative that was kind of coming out in the culture around 2010. And I know it's a decade later, but like, those are formative years in our career, where it was highly like hustle culture. Like 2010 to 2015 was all about like putting the hours, putting the work. It's about drive. It's about power, you know? And now we're kind of realizing, oh, actually, like, long-term, that has like some huge effects on our health.
Yeah.
And our mental health, and like, and how come the success bar keeps moving, right? And but I think that there's still like this balance of like, you can still be a driven person that also can take moments to like appreciate things. At least that's what I think. I'm really not sure. I mean, this is a really experiment. I'm like, can I still achieve things in life if I'm not like breaking my back to make it happen?
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah. We'll have a year end. We'll have a end of year conversation to be like, how was this year for us? How did this year feel?
How did it feel? Well, that sounds great. We'll do one in another year. We'll find out. We'll review the podcast and be like, oh yeah, that's where I was. The other thing about success is it feels very elusive. Like, I notice now in my life, like, I feel really proud of what I did with Rose and the Riveters. But now I don't have Rose and the Riveters. I feel like I'm back at the beginning. And so then my feeling of success is like, well, that was before. You're not doing that now. And I was like, well, can I still feel like a successful person for doing it? No, that was before. That no longer exists. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So, oh, little mind demons.
Yeah, mind demons. Isn't that the truth? Like, even I can, even though I'm still, like, I release under my own name and I'm still like in the same project of, you know, my solo music, I even feel I can use my imagination what that can feel like from an outsider's perspective. I'm like, well, no, like, of course that was like, you should still feel like that, you know, proud of that success, and that success is still like, is still relevant. You know what I mean? Like, it's still like outside perspective. But like, what I'm hearing you say, that I can relate to that when I think about releasing a record. It's like when you're in that process of recording and like putting together all these videos and like, you know, collaborating with other creatives, there's just like, there's this, I don't know, this force, this whirlwind of energy that you don't know where it's going to land yet, right? And like, even, and then you release the record and you still, like, it hasn't been that long ago since I just put out an album, and it will still, now it has a life of its own that's out of my control. Yeah. Like, I can still do certain things to help, you know, get maybe, you know, in front of more people and like into more ears or whatever. But like, for the most part, a lot of my work as the, you know, I co-produced it, I wrote it, performed on it, you know, played on it, did all, like, you know, put together the shoot for it, blah, 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 for the album art, and you know, did all those things. And now it's like, well, it is what it is, and bye-bye. But it almost feels like, yeah, now I'm like, okay, what's next? What's next?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, when am I going to take a break? And also too, like, to recharge. And also, when does it like, creatively, when am I going to take a break to recharge creatively? And I feel like the 2-year album cycle, like, is anyone even saying that anymore?
I don't know. You know what? I kind of just think that people don't really know anything about albums anymore. The world is just full of, like, we don't know what the next 2 weeks has in store. Does anybody know what a 2-year album cycle means? Like, you know what I mean? Like, of course, that was based upon being able to release a record and then tour it for 2 years. That makes sense. But we're not doing that right now. So yeah. Who knows? It is unwritten, as Natasha Bedfield says.
Yes. Yeah, that is so true. That is so true. I wonder when she last released a record.
Great question, right? Yeah, and I also think that there's people who are, like, not even releasing a song, and they're putting it on TikTok, and then suddenly it goes viral, and they're like, oh, okay, I gotta put it out to make some money. And, you know, I don't think that there's actually any recipe to success unless, like, you happen to have, like, a great financial backer. That helps. But other than that, it's just everything you've been doing. I mean, you've been showing up for a long time, doing the work, putting in the hours, and that's why you're here where you are today.
I'm curious how TikTok works.
Just in general. Well, it's an app on your computer. No. It is a mystery. But what I will tell you is that the algorithm is very smart, in that it's very different from Instagram or Facebook in the way that it's not built upon relationships in the same way. Like, you know how, like, what Instagram and Facebook is about the people you already know. And that's kind of actually what I love about TikTok, is that all of my followers are not people I know in person.
Right.
So it gave me a lot of freedom, especially at first, to experiment. I felt like it was akin to when you do a show not in your own city or province. And so no one there knows you. You know, when your parents are in the audience, you're like, I'm not going to tell that joke. but, you know, when you're on the road, nobody knows you, you get to experiment. And so it watches to see, like, what kind of person responds to your content, and then finds similar people and then brings it to you, which I think is really helpful. And so that's really fun. And it also finds what you like, which I think is also really a really important thing to keep in mind. Like, so for instance, I, like, watch TikTok, and then I watch things that, like, are not good for my mind because I find them fascinating. Say, like, you know, survivor stories of, you know, sexual assault. And then I have to actually go in and say, like, you can tell the algorithm, I don't want to see this, because it's not that I'm not fascinated and that I want to support survivors, but I know that watching, you know, an hour a day of, like, negative things is not conducive to me being a joyful, happy person. So I tell the algorithm, like, don't show me this. Even though I watch it, please don't. It's not good for me. So that's a little Cole's notes. I think that the musicians who are making it on there, there are musicians who are just, like, man, incredible musicians out there. Just like I'm making funny videos every day. They're actually putting out music, which, you know, is a very interesting thing as someone who spent my life being a musician, where I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. but, you know, they're like putting out music you could duet with. They're putting out they're sharing their songs. They're showing the day in the life on tour or whatever. And, you know, it's just like much of the other content, but sometimes it's just the way they do it. It just really hits and it takes off. And I think that we'll see also musicians creating work that they think will do well on TikTok, which I think is an interesting, you know, that'll be an interesting culture shift, like how people will write for the ability to take off on TikTok, which in itself, like, I don't know. And then we'll also have people who will also, we see this already. We'll see more artists who are really successful on TikTok, but don't know how to do a live show. Because it's really different to entertain people for 30 seconds or 20 seconds than it is to entertain people for 45 minutes or an hour and a half. And so I think that those are just very different things.
Right. That's interesting.
My Cole's notes thinking about TikTok.
No, I appreciate you sharing your insight. And I'm really curious, like, if you think folks are going to start writing for TikTok,
Oh yeah.
What?
I think there probably already are. Actually.
Right. Right. I wonder, what do you think, like those, what do you think the secrets to TikTok song success would be?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the artist, right? Because, you could write, like, there are songs that businesses, you know, I'm sure you like, it costs that much because it, takes me effing hours or whatever. Like, somebody wrote a song like that so that businesses could use it. And, like, I would imagine that's probably, like, a really, because businesses want to use music that, like, showcases their business products. So I can see people, like, doing stuff. I think that there's, like, songs now that kind of talk about how, like, you know, I'm gorgeous and I'm beautiful for women who are, like, you know, it's kind of following the culture of, like, people being, you know, the body positivity movement, that kind of thing. Mm. So I think it'll just be interesting. They'll just follow the culture and then write songs for it. And then there can be some positives to that, because you could, you know, just write that in your day, self-produce it, throw it on DistroKid, and then release it. And then if it goes well, you know, it could pick up some traction. Like, of course, TikTok royalties are really different from, or they're not different. You know how we get, like, you know, a fifth of a cent on Spotify?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like that, but only like 15 seconds of it. So it's like, if you think of like a fifth of a fifth of a cent, because you used a fifth of a song. So it's not like it's gonna just TikTok alone. It would, you know, but I hear on radio songs that I heard on TikTok 6 months ago. So it's clearly part of a, like, it hits on TikTok, then it goes to Instagram, then it goes to the radio stations. And like that's, and you know, it's already, it goes to TikTok, then it hits Spotify and Instagram, and that's how it's like coming out. So it's kind of like memes happen on Reddit and then they go to Facebook. That's how this other content's kind of spreading.
That is so interesting to me. That's so interesting.
This is like a business lesson, philosophy lesson, art lesson.
100%. And you know what? I knew it would be. I knew it would be. I think that you are like, yeah, you're just such an open, lovely human. And I'm just...
Oh, you're so kind.
And I'm just saying the truth. It's just the truth. And I knew that you would be an excellent guest and shed light on many subjects during this conversation. And I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for you and for everything you've shared with me and eventually our dear listeners today.
Yay.
So I feel like you've given me an insight about some different techniques, if you will, about, you know, trying to, you know, cultivate joy. And then now you're kind of inspiring me to, I don't know, maybe try a little bit of TikTok stuff. I don't know, maybe that will be in the ahead for me in the new year. I don't know, I'm not sure. But if you were going to give folks some advice as we head into, you know, we start 2022, what advice would you give? Or if you wanted to, you know, plant some seeds, put some intentions out there.
Well, I don't know about advice. My husband and I choose a word of the year every year. That's an enjoyable thing. Whoa. We even make a vision board together, at least previously. I don't know if we will anymore because I don't know where to put it, and it's kind of an eyesore, but
you know,
our visions.
No one talks about that. No one talks about how everyone talks about vision boards, but nobody talks about A, where to put them, and B, like, yeah, how
they're
good, how good do they look? Yeah. You know,
this is like it's just like a little beautiful mind of collection of little pictures all over a little board, you know, which I love, but yeah.
Yeah, sometimes vision boards can be ugly. Nobody yeah. says that. No one talks about it, but we're shedding light on some truth over here.
Maybe it's because the visual artists do it, not the musicians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's like a big thing. I mean, yeah, that's a big thing. I like write, you know, I'm just doing right now, like a year-end review where I remember like everything I did in the last year, because it can feel like I haven't done anything, but I'm like, you know, like had a couple million view plus views videos on TikTok. Like, I started TikTok last year. I released 3 songs. Like, I think sometimes doing a year-end review is really helpful to make us feel like the future could be good. I think that's really helpful. If you haven't already, I suggest meditation. It is good. Yeah, I don't know. Those are my only thoughts so far. Am I missing anything?
Well, I'm curious what the process for picking a word of the year is.
Ooh, well, okay. So we think a lot about how we want to feel next year and when we want to. So we've had like fearless is one of our years. Like, so 2021 was, we chose the word celebrate. I think because we had hoped that, you know, we would have a vaccine and we would be back to our life, but also because that was something we were personally working on, to be people who celebrated more, like took a moment and celebrated the good things that happened, because, you know, sometimes you're so busy, you forget to be like, oh, that amazing thing happened. So we chose that word. And usually around September, we start talking about like, what's our new year? And then through the year, when we have dinner together, we'll be like, what do you think? How are we doing on this year? Have we done enough? And then sometimes, you know, the options to come like, hey, it's this person's birthday. Should I go? And then we'll be like, hey, well, we probably should do something big with it because, you know, that's our word this year. Or like, oh, you know, with fearless was our word, you know, we'd think, oh, well, we should, I don't know, that word makes me feel scared. And then I don't want to do that. I'm just kind of uncomfortable by it. And you're like, okay, but our word is fearless, so we got to do it, you know? So it's kind of like something that we get to co-create together and we get to talk about. And it's something kind of positive and unites us and, you know, puts a little intention in our life. We haven't decided quite yet as the time of our recording what our word is going to be, but we have discussed a few options. And one of the top contenders right now is illumine. So it, you know, like it has to be like a word that is kind of actionable and is good. Like, you don't want to do like hope, because hope is a little bit sad and it's a bit not actionable.
Right.
Yeah, and there's like certain words that I'm like, I don't know about that one. That one's, you know, like feels dangerous. Like, I don't want to, you know, like I wouldn't want to like use fire as my word, because then I'd be like, I don't want my house to go on fire. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So it's a great opportunity to also like discuss the word together, being like, And then for us, it goes in the middle of our vision board, or at least previously it's been. So we'll see. But illumine kind of felt like, regardless of what 2020 brings or 2022 brings, you know, you can illumine from wherever you are. And that could be light, that could be joy, that can be wisdom, you know, like there's some movement in that. So we'll see. Or maybe I'll just put money in the middle of it, because that's what I love.
Yeah, I actually just, I was in my writing class this morning, I was writing about how much I love receiving money as a gift.
Oh, it's the best.
And I loved it so much as a kid. I had a November birthday, and I loved, because as a kid, I didn't have a job. I didn't have an allowance. We did chores, but we weren't really like paid for our chores. I'm not saying I went without, but it's just like, if I needed a new lunch kit, I would be able to get a new lunch kit, but it's not like I had money. Right. So my birthday was in November, and that was, and I would always ask for money, because then I would save my money. And that's what I would use as for my holiday shopping for my family. And I loved doing that. It made me feel so good. And then eventually my family figured out what I was doing, and they cut me off, and I was like very upset, because like that was my only, you know, income from like my holiday spending. I was so sad. But I love getting
cute little Megan, little cute baby Megan, using her little birthday money to buy people presents. I was like, definitely not this girl over here. But like, thank you for my money, I'll be buying things for myself, thank you.
But I loved the action of it. I loved the whole process, you know, finding the perfect gift, wrapping it, the anticipation, the look on their faces Christmas morning, maybe like shock, like how did this kid afford this stuff, and then they pieced it together or whatever, you know, like and it was always like, I remember mainly going like the dollar store or whatever in the town and country mall and getting like the buck or two. in the Town and Country Aww. Mall and getting most of it. But like, yeah, that was just, it was
so cute.
It was a joy. It was a joy. And then I, then yeah. they figured it out and cut me off. But anyways,
they are.
So, you know, we're towards the end of the episode now, and I actually, sometimes I forget that a part of this podcast is to actually talk about snacks and touring.
Oh, yeah.
So
I love snacks and touring. So, well, not touring as much as snack.
Well, I'm curious, before we have to part, what is, was one of your favorite touring snacks? And then just like favorite snacks in general, if you want to, since we haven't been on the road for the last like 21 months or whatever.
Well, let me tell you, I never want to see a grocery store sushi box ever again.
Fair. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know what? Just I have eaten a surprising amount of hummus in my lifetime. And you know what? I still got some in my fridge. Like, the other girls in the band were like, I hate hummus. I never want to see it again. And I was like, seems like it's an unlimited thing that I could just keep eating more of. So I still like hummus. Road snacks. Great question. Well, I will tell you, I don't know. This is just something in Germany. I don't think I could get anywhere else. But so for many, many moons, I was gluten intolerant for 7 years, and it had to do with like the stress of life. And so when I learned, started meditating about a year into meditating, I could finally eat gluten, just because my stomach lining had finally learned how to replenish itself.
Oh, wow.
And I was flirting with the idea, and I had heard that in Europe, their flour was different. So when we went to Germany, I was like, okay, I'm gonna experiment. And they have this amazing thing that's like a croissant and a cinnamon bun, which are like my two favorite things. Ooh, in one.
Nice.
And I ate it and I didn't have any problems. And it was like, it was a dream. It was, I'm surprised. We once went to a restaurant in Calgary that was like garlic cheese bites that was gluten. And I hadn't, like, this was another thing I tried when in my first, like, dipping into it. And like, you know what? My body had a visceral reaction that I welled up with tears, and I like looked like I was crying, but it was so beautiful to eat, to eat this. I was like, oh my God, like, I'm literally crying because these garlic cheese bites are so good.
I love that. So yeah. The croissant, cinnamon bun, garlic cheese bites, those are it.
Oh, those are, I mean, they're not really snacks I can have with me all the time, but man, that's a big deal. Like, well, also, I'm also a big lover of cheese.
Oh, and, same.
You know, whenever, like, you know, whenever the plate in the back, in the green room is like purple grapes, or I guess they're called black grapes, and like brie cheese.
Oh, yes.
I'm like, the girls saw nothing. I was like, no, that wasn't there. It's already in my bag. I'm like,
oh my gosh. You know what? I really look forward to the day where we can share some cheese, my friend. Really look forward to that. Faraday, it's been such a joy to get to speak with you, my friend. You take the greatest of care, okay?
You too. Thanks for having me.
Faraday, thank you so much for this lovely conversation, my friend. Dear listener, please check out her music and everything that she's up to at ilovefaraday.com. You've been listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Centre in Regina, Saskatchewan. The Creative City Centre is supported by the Canada Council for the Arts, Sask Arts, the City of Regina, Canadian Heritage, and Creative Saskatchewan. This podcast was made possible because of their ongoing support, so thank you so, so much. Also, thank you to the Garys for the use of their song Burger Boy as the theme music, if you will. The Creative City Centre is a community-based art centre that used to present around 200 events a year and gave a lot of emerging artists a home as they were starting out. Now they are home for a lot of online productions, so check out creativecitycentre.ca to see what else they are cooking up besides all of this pep and ched with me, Megan Nash. Support live music, folks, no matter what form it's served up in. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.